Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is the author of the concise advice book, The Smart Selling Book, Mark Edwards. How are you today, Mark?
I'm very well, Miro. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much, and it's great to have you on the podcast. For those listening, Mark is the founder of Whiteboard Strategies, a consultancy that specializes in sales training and visual communications. He is also the author of the Visual Communications book, also in the Concise Advice series, and he is here today on the podcast to talk about smart selling. So, Mark, my first question for you is, what inspired you to become an author?
I think it's something that I wanted to do, but I'd failed to even start at. But it's something that I wanted to do for a very long time. I did go on a goal setting workshop in 1992, so we're talking 25 years ago. And on that workshop, I still have the list in one of my cupboards here somewhere. I wrote a list of goals, and one of those goals was to write a book. It was something that I clearly wanted to do at that time, so that would have made me about 27 years of age, but it took me another 23 years to actually get around to doing it. But as I say, something that I'd wanted to do for a very, very long time. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to work with your colleagues at Lid and actually making the realizing the goal eventually.
Yeah, and as we're on the subject, the Smart Selling book is your second book in the Concise Advice series, as we mentioned, after the Visual Communications book. Are there any connections between the two books, and how can we use them when it comes to sales?
Yes, oddly enough, I think either of the books in isolation, the Smart Selling book or the Visual Communication book, only really gives you perhaps half of my expertise. I seem to have developed over the years into somebody with not only a curiosity and interest in these areas, but I've developed a certain skill set originating, as I did, as an enterprise a corporate sales person, and then working my way through that, eventually moving into the training arena, where for many, many years I was training sales leaders within organizations. And then as part of that work, I developed the necessary skills to be able to communicate not only verbally, but visually as well. I think perhaps it was in the classroom as a trainer where I first realized that maybe PowerPoint had reached the end of its usefulness, where through the course of a day's workshop, actually PowerPoint in many respects kind of turned people off. So I started using whiteboards and flip charts. And to explain many of the concepts, it's always been easier for me to use a visual interpretation. And that's from that then came the kind of the whiteboard strategies consulting piece. So where I am today is I help organizations, typically global technology companies that sell, whether it's software or some kind of service. The only way for a customer really to ever fully understand and appreciate what the organization can do is some kind of illustration or diagram or model. And so it's those two areas that I now bring together as my unique proposition in the marketplace. I can help organizations because I have a deep appreciation and understanding of how to sell. And at the same time, an appreciation and understanding of how to convey concepts, often abstract, complex concepts, but how to convey them visually as well as verbally. So if you buy the two books, if anyone's listening who doesn't have either, I think although they weren't written as companion or sibling books, actually what you get is perhaps the full perspective on how I see things.
Yeah, and I'd like to focus a bit on the smart selling book. Can you tell us a bit about what the concept of smart selling actually is and how do we use it?
Well, I'm sure you'll, if you had the concept, work smarter, not harder. That works in many areas. Perhaps the only area where it doesn't work maybe is in the gymnasium, where working harder is perhaps the only route to get the goals that you desire. But in the work arena, and particularly in the sales sphere, hard work is, I suppose, is a given. It's not a particularly easy job. The hours are often very long and difficult in many respects for many people to adhere to. So the whole thing here was really to point out that, particularly with regards to certain elements of the sale, actually working smarter is the only approach. Working harder won't necessarily work. Just putting in longer hours or being more persistent actually can have a detrimental effect. So the individual employed in a sales career should be looking to find smarter approaches. And by a smarter approach, I mean one that perhaps has a better perspective on what it is the individual is trying to achieve, and perhaps also can allow an individual to secure the win that they desire, but to get it quickly, or quicker, I should say, and easier than it would have been if they took the other route. So it is a case of working smarter, not harder.
Yes, absolutely. And as we're on the topic, it seems that understanding buyers is a very vital part of the sale process, whether it is long or short. And how can we do this effectively? Do you perhaps have any tips that transcend the different markets and sectors?
So, as you say, the appreciation and understanding of the buyer is essential. And it's one of the things in face-to-face kind of, or person-to-person consultative selling, that you have a good opportunity actually to understand and to define, and the key to it really is asking questions. Really what we need to appreciate is, you know, what is a customer actually looking for, what are they looking to achieve, and also what kind of things do they value. Would they be prepared to pay a premium for a certain feature or another feature maybe? These are the things that need to be determined and defined. And the only real way to do it is, you know, certainly as I said, in the offline world, is by asking questions. Now, online, I think it's very, very different. You don't get to speak to the customer. But if you were to consider, I mean, Amazon's appreciation and understanding of me as a buyer is probably quite extraordinary. They have a system, not a human being, but a computer system, which has basically recorded every buying decision I've made with them over the last 10, 15 years, whatever it's been. And I think I started using Amazon in about 1999. So they've got the best part of 20 years of records with me. Also, I believe in the online world, not only do they see what I buy, they see what I look at. So organizations like Amazon, and I put Facebook up there as well, they have an appreciation of us, which I think transcends and goes far beyond what an individual salesperson can achieve. And in so doing, Amazon is able to present the world to me online as I would appreciate it. It makes suggestions, recommendations, which are increasingly accurate, and the more accurate they get, the more I respond to them. I can't tell you, Mira, how many books I've bought from Amazon as a follow-on to another purchase, which I decided, and then it puts up this little, if you bought this, then you might like this.
Yes.
Other book.
Yes, it's also scary, just thinking about it and how much information you can find out about your customers that way.
Mm, they the last chapter, oddly enough, in the Smart Selling book is, I don't think I'd call it a manifesto for the future of selling, but I do draw this parallel where the online world, which originally 20 years ago, selling online was very, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, actually, but as I said, in the early days, if you tried to buy something online, you'd get a warning window would appear, basically telling you not to do it because there were criminals out there and your credit card details would not be safe.
Yes.
So there were a huge amount of obstacles put in front of buyers. That has now been removed to the extent where if I have the inkling to buy something and I have either my smartphone or I'm at a desk with a computer in front of me, even if I have the impulse to buy, and I am besieged by impulses to buy things all the time. I hear a piece of music and I think, oh, I wonder how that would sound on vinyl. I need to buy that. And on Amazon, I can literally do it in a frictionless way. I mean, there's no hassle at all, even down to one click having my details. I just have to press the button once and it's job done. Don't have to put my address in, don't have to put my credit card details in, and so on. So this is definitely one of the challenges that I think salespeople will have to overcome, because it's much more troublesome and problematic buying from a salesperson. The human interaction increases complexity significantly. So I think there's a lot of people out there who, given the opportunity to buy something online, they'd prefer to do it that way. So it is, as you said, it's kind of spooky, eerie in many respects, but something perhaps that we can learn from.
Yes, and it leads on very well into my next question, which is about chapter 8 of the book. And in there, you talk about understanding value. And I guess what we talked about very much feeds into that, because that convenience of being able to buy and sell so easily is a great asset to many companies.
Yeah.
But how do we actually understand value in terms of us in our human aspect, and why does it matter?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will leverage the old saying that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And I would say it's the same with regards to value. And it really is down to what the individual appreciates. As you said there, convenience, I think, is a significant value. I will pay for convenience. Oddly enough, I'll keep coming back to Amazon, I suppose, as an example here. Not only do we get convenience, but we also get low price. You know, there are many occasions when I would be prepared to pay a premium for convenience, but it seems that Amazon want to basically deliver conveniently, but also to deliver as cost effectively as possible. That's one way to go about wiping out much of the competition that there is out there. But we all have a different appreciation for what we value. The person that would stay at a Premier Inn hotel is perhaps looking for, you know, the lowest cost, clean bed for the night, maybe with a hearty breakfast thrown in, as opposed to the person who is staying in a suite at a Four Seasons hotel, where, I don't know, it's probably going to cost maybe the equivalent of 40 or 50 nights at a Premier Inn. That person appreciates and values something very, very different. Maybe appreciates the finer things in life, maybe appreciates the attention to detail that the hotelier has put into the fixtures and fittings, but also to the level of service that they'll receive when they arrive. So, you know, it really is down to the individual. Some of my purchasing decisions would seem absurd to many others out there. I mean, if I can give one brief example, my wife looked at me dumbfounded a few weeks ago when I bought yet another copy of the Beatles' classic album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which is in its 50th year. It's just celebrated its 50th anniversary. I already have maybe three or four versions, CD, but vinyl is particularly my passion at the moment. But I have stereo and, believe it or not, mono versions. And the Beatles record company, Apple, have been very, very clever in how they packaged the new editions, where one of the editions is a four CD set, one of the CDs which you've already got anyway. The other three are outtakes, which are basically, you know, the I wouldn't say that they are the outtakes, the pieces of tape that were picked up from the control room floor, but to me they're very interesting. But to most people, they would be, you know, of very, very little interest. In fact, I would say of no interest to most people. However, when they package it the way that they have, with their four CDs in a box set with a limited edition, well, how limited, I don't know, but with a very high quality, full color, 12-inch by 12-inch printed book inside as well, then actually I say it was £100. I think it's about £135, if I remember rightly. And bought in conjunction, said, with the new edition of the vinyl album. So yeah, my wife looked at me in a kind of stupefied manner.
Right.
But to me, it made complete sense. I've had immense joy and satisfaction from, say, listening to these outtakes. And again, that to me, the value is immense, but unrecognizable to my wife and to most people, I think.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And that's a very good example of tapping into that human aspect and what interests us and how we can actually then apply it on a business sense. And this leads into my next question, actually, and that is, can you perhaps give us free sales techniques or tips that you use yourself?
Well, I tell you, the one I'm really exploring the most at the moment, and actually this podcast, I think, is an element of it, which is I'm doing a lot of putting a lot of effort in. I'm working hard, and I'm hopefully working smart in this area as well. But in this whole kind of area of social selling, not necessarily social media per se, although that's a part of it. In the business arena, for myself and my business, LinkedIn is becoming increasingly the go-to platform. So I've definitely made a shift in the tools that I use on a day-to-day basis. And although it's not necessarily quite a skill set at this moment, I'm kind of developing it. But this whole area of social selling, trying to better utilize the platforms, the technology platforms that are available, and trying to get trying to yield the best possible result. Hey, listen, maybe there's another book in that. So I will continue with my investigations.
Great.
A couple of others. A questioning techniques. And again, I don't go into these in either of the books in detail, other than I think there's a part in the visual communications book where we talk about how you can use a horizontal line. If you draw out a horizontal line and scale it from 1 to 10, you can visually ascertain, you know, to which end of the scale does somebody see themselves. And so that leads on to what I call the billion-dollar question, which is a form of forensic questioning where, in effect, we ask people, or I would ask people, to score themselves. So if I have an interest, potentially we can go back and let's tie up the value question and the hotel example that I mentioned earlier as a billion-dollar question. What I potentially could do is ask somebody who's considering staying at a hotel, I could say, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is the inclusion of a full English breakfast in your appreciation of value? And somebody would, the kind of person who would say, well, actually, it's I'd score that as a 9 or a 10. Clearly, they are giving you the best possible indicator of what they appreciate. If somebody turns around and says, well, actually, I score that as a 1 because there are many out there, they just get up and go in the morning, they don't have any breakfast at all. But it's this form of questioning that has revealed the individual characteristics. So if anyone's interested in the billion-dollar question, I do actually have some more detail on my LinkedIn profile page where I've got a number of articles there. It's Mark Edwards and Visual Communications. You could probably find me if you were... if you're curious and interested enough, please do. And then lastly, Miro, on negotiations, I don't know how often you find yourself negotiating maybe commercially, but maybe you negotiate with a partner or a flatmate or a colleague or whatever it is. If somebody asks you to do something, get used to negotiating, and rather than just agreeing to the request. And a simple negotiation strategy, probably the most popular negotiation strategy, is kind of split the difference, you know, so you meet somewhere in the middle. But the one I'd recommend more so is a kind of give and get. So you're if somebody asks you to do something, you say, well, look, if I do this, then will you do that? So if I think it's fair. Both parties get something. But you ask for something kind of in return. And listen, it could be small, could be seemingly insignificant. The other party's not going to say yes to it unless they see it as being of value to them also. But just, I think, get used to negotiating and getting something in return. If you give something, then get something back.
Great. That is a fantastic advice there. And I think, as you say, very fair and very to the point. Now, my last question for you is the one I ask all the guests on the podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
well, oddly enough, or not oddly enough, I should say, is it not the case that I said many of the comments that I've made during this call, I think, have oddly enough been affected by what I'm taking in and what I'm reading at this moment in time? So I perhaps, like a lot of the listeners out there, I never really read one book at a time. I did go through a period a few years ago where I made myself read a single book to completion before moving on to another one. But my I've reverted back to type, which is basically to buy every book that I am interested in and to pick my way through and see which ones actually jump out and pull me right through to the end here. But I tend to read multiple books at any one time. The two that are at the top of the pile by the side of my bed, which is usually a pile of about 20 books deep, but the two that are getting the daily attention at the moment is Nassim Nicholas Taleb's Black Swan book, which along with Thinking Fast and Slow, I think those do go into this kind of behavioral psychology that when we talk about the Amazon approach to kind of customer awareness and understanding. The Black Swan, I think, gives quite a lot of insights into how and why those things work. And the other one, which is a very meaty tome of about 850 pages, which is Philip Norman's biography of Paul McCartney, just to fill out my never-ending or insatiable appetite for Beatles trivia and information a little bit more. And it's done such a good job. I'm actually going for a couple of days on holidays, believe it or not, to Liverpool in a few weeks' time. My wife is patiently going to come around on a Beatles tour of some of the sights and sounds of the 1960s Liverpool, which I think will be great fun. Well, so it's an autobiography, I should say, and a non-fiction, which for me is typical. It's very rare for a fiction book to, one, get purchased, and second, actually, to get read.
Yeah, and that's a great opportunity for you to introduce to why the four-piece collection and the outtakes are actually fantastic. And then maybe she can come around.
Maybe what?
Maybe she can come around and end up joining you.
Oh, well, yes. But as I said, I think my enjoyment would be somewhat hampered by the bemused expression on her face. I'm sure she'd happily sit there with a glass of Prosecco, and she'd probably get more enjoyment watching me and my expressions to what I'm hearing than listening to it. But anyway, we're going to Liverpool together. She has not only agreed to it, she even booked it all online, by the way, of course.
Wow, that's great. Well, we hope you have a great time there. And with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us on today's podcast. And for those listening, of course, if you'd like to know more about the Smart Selling book and the Visual Communication book alongside Mark's work, you can find links in the description below, not only to his mentioned LinkedIn profile and content, but all other affiliate links where you can buy the book and find out more about Whiteboard Strategy. So thank you very much for joining us today, Mark.
Thank you, Miro.
And we will look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio.